A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week. So, this is podcast time, and on this week's episode, we've got the one and only Anna Luno. I've known Anna for a few years, obviously. If you don't know Anna, then I'm not too sure what rock you've been sleeping under, but Anna is a DJ, producer, had multiple huge records out over the years from Australia. She's also one of the, or part of the furniture, Apple Music has her dance record show. She's an amazing person, and I love talking to her. So without further ado, Anna Luno. And we are live. Anna, how's it going?
Oh, I'm really good, but I am failing at time management today already, and it's only 10 a.m. I've already given myself a massive fail. But yes.
Well, you did just blame Chris Lake, so...
Threw him under the bus.
Threw him under the bus.
I actually had an interview with him for my radio show this morning, and it was at an hour earlier, and I was half an hour earlier from that, so I texted Chris, and I was like, hey, I'm running early. Do you want to jump on? We'll knock this out really quick, because I wanted to get a workout in before I talk to you.
Yeah.
What ended up happening? Me and Chris got gas-bagged for over an hour, and I'm running late for you, and I didn't do a workout.
Well, do you want me to also, he messaged me probably like an hour ago as well.
he
was like, oh, are you playing Miami on this time, because I'm going to be in town at the same time. So
that's so funny.
During those periods we were all talking. How's life anyway?
Connected. Sorry, I'm just cleaning up my space. Life is good. It's an interesting time still for me. Like, I'm definitely not back in my zone yet. I'm sort of like still in force. I'm kind of like an air balloon that's lost its grounding, and I'm just kind of flopping around the place. But I'm learning a lot, and I'm going with the flow.
You're still in Australia, right?
I'm still in Australia. I had to relocate during the pandemic to make it easier to survive with my two little kids.
Yeah.
And I needed to be closer to my family. Mm. So I came back to Australia last year, and I didn't know how long I'd be here for. I just was like, I'm not coping.
Yeah.
I need to go back. And then I'm still here right now. I'm definitely heading back in the game early next year, because they actually shut the borders here. You couldn't get in or out, really.
It's wild.
And so I haven't been able to leave, and they've actually still not opened the borders properly. Or maybe they did at the beginning of this month.
Yeah,
I think they've started to, but...
Because the
flights are so backed up, there's like, you still can't even get a flight. And if you do get a flight, it's like $10,000 more expensive. So I'm just going to sit tight.
I was looking for flights to Japan the other day, just because I was like, oh, let's just see what flights are like. From the UK, It's like 12 grand.
Fuck.
And I'm like, who's flying? Who's spending, like, for an economy flight, not even for, like, a business or first class. Like, that's just straight up 12 grand. And you're just like...
Yeah. Damn. And so that's exactly the same as here. And not only that, the flights keep getting cancelled and you keep getting bumped off your flight. So there's no way to know that you're going to be able to get back in. And I've got two little kids. Like, I can't run the risk of just not getting back in and ending up divorced when I get back here because my husband's like freaking. But also what they say to do is to buy first class or business so that you have more power. So if they bump the flight, they're going to find you another seat. And it's like, well, there's no point in going because I won't make any money or like be able to do any gigs anyway, really. Yeah. So like there's, and then you had to quarantine before. They've just stopped the hotel quarantine. So then you'd have to pay like another $3,000 on top to be quarantined in a hotel for 2 weeks away from everybody. So yeah, it was just too hard to leave. So I just sort of stayed here.
Australia's just like turned into this crazy, like, crazy place.
It's a little bit of a crazy place, but at the same time, we've had a really low mortality rate.
Oh yeah.
COVID. So like on one hand, I totally see the stuff online. I'm like, well, yeah, that's kind of true. But at the same time, our loss per million people or something super is like low. Minuscule.
Yeah.
So they have saved a lot of lives. So it just depends on how you want to think about it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Have you enjoyed being back though?
I have. I haven't been close to my family for over 8 years in proximity. So it's been really important to me to be back here and for them to get to know my kids and for me to sort of be close to my parents who are not getting any younger and all that kind of stuff. So on that regard, it's been really good in a lot of ways. And in another way, I don't even know that this is really the Sydney that I remember too, because everything's been shut.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what's back here. I feel like I live in this house.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's in Sydney. I don't know where, like, I just don't know where it is, but I live in this house and I exist on the internet.
Yeah. It's mad, isn't it? Because it was kind of the same for me going back to the UK. I'd been back a lot more than probably you'd been back to Australia, but I hadn't spent time in the UK for that long. I think it was like 6 years. And yeah, you're right. Like, parents get older. You're like, for me, like, niece and nephews are getting older. Like, just people's lives. Like, I don't know if you've been able to like see any friends or anything like that. But it's like people's lives change, and it's mad the world that we kind of live in, because we're on the go all the time, and then all of a sudden we're like told that we have to stop. And that's kind of, how did you find that kind of like whole reflection period? Because I know so many people that just like went ups and downs, but was like, because you had the kids and all the family, it was like kind of nice.
Well, it started out really brutally because I think that people that follow me online might have picked it up, but I got really sick at the end of last year in a bad pregnancy situation. And I actually ended up like being really unwell and ending up in hospital and not able to hear for a month and all these things that happened. So even right before the pandemic started, I had the baby. And I was already in like 4 months worth of crisis mode where I was feeling like I'd had to cancel some gigs. I'd had to basically stay in bed for a month and try and not, you know, nothing serious happened to the baby. And then the pandemic hit after I was already at rock bottom. So basically I lost childcare for my second child. So I was with a newborn baby and a toddler recovering from like a really bad physical experience where I'd lost a lot of weight. I was really emaciated. I had a lot of digestion issues and all this kind of stuff. So it's that beginning part of the pandemic was truly very much survival for me and my partner. Like, we were really, really unwell and like scared and going through like a very serious time. On top of that was the pandemic, which was hugely stressful. And then there was like, we had to make changes. So then we were like, okay, we're going to go back to Sydney because we need help.
Yeah.
And so we made all the plans and slowly those plans happened over like a 4 month period. And then we got back here. And then we started to heal a little bit and be able to reflect and have those moments. But I definitely felt like I was having a very different experience to most people that I was talking to, because it wasn't just me going through the pandemic. Yeah. I was protecting these little babies. And one of them, the newborn baby, was 5 weeks premature.
Yeah.
Like, he was literally like in hospital for a month. So I was my main focus was just keeping them all alive and happy. So there was no reflection. There was no like baking sourdough bread. There was no, there was none of that. It was like very, very serious time for me. And I'm playing catch up, just trying to like work out where what's happened to my career and what's happened to my life, and everything that I've known for the last 15 years is being uprooted. And I know deeply that like there's amazing learning to come from this, and I'm changing, and in many ways, like the growth that I'd had there was all I needed, and I'm ready for new challenges, all these things. But like, it's still really hard to like constantly to get a reminder on my phone of like this day last year. And I'm like, what the hell? Who's that? Whose life is that? And what the fuck happened to my life? I know you relate.
Yeah, it's wild. I don't relate to that at all, because no, I didn't have kids to look after and I wasn't pregnant. So
I mean like the time thing, totally, and like looking back and being like, whoa.
Totally. I guess, how did the whole radio thing keep going during it for you? Like, because obviously all of your shows, did you keep doing that, or did you have somebody kind of step in for you?
I've kept doing it. That was the one thing that I delivered. Yeah, I just kept doing it. I took 3 or 4 weeks off when the baby was in hospital, or maybe even a whole month off. But I kept doing it because it's so a part of my weekly routine. You know, I'm just so used to doing it. And quite honestly, I mean, I need a job.
Yeah.
And I would never, that job's been the lifeline for me now, like through the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I love doing it. Yeah. So it's like, I never would have let that slip, you know, but it did put me in some pretty crazy situations, like having to do interviews at all hours of the night in different time zones while I've got like sleeping babies in the room, or like juggling things and really just being like crossing my fingers, like, oh my God. But there was once my daughter, I was talking to, during the pandemic, Apple did these kind of like at home with specials, and they would partner up a whole, like a handful of people to do at home fun specials of like, how are you going?
Yeah.
And I was in an at home special with Alesso and Liam Payne from One Direction and another one of the Beats One, another one of the Apple Music hosts. My daughter was like banging on the door, like screaming, trying to get in. And I'm like, this is mental. How is it that I'm on the phone to One Direction and my two-year-old is going completely mental and like rattling the door like, let me in! I was like, fucking hell.
That's the thing, kids don't give a fuck, do they? They just want their mum. There's something so beautiful about that. I love that, because it's like, when you tell your daughter that in 10 years time, she'll be like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. But that's, I love that you can tell her that to a certain extent. It's kind of like an amazing thing. But I don't know if you've experienced it, but like, if you're like calling like mobile phone companies or like airlines, and they're, all of their staff were like at home during the pandemic taking calls, so like I've heard so many like random things happen in the background of people just being like like the dogs barking, and it's so weird that you don't hear it, but it's kind of, it's changed, the world's changed. I don't think it's
definitely, I was on a lot of calls where there would be like it would be the you know, corporate calls, and they would be in their kitchen and their mum would walk past in a dressing gown, like I love that. I did love the breaking down of the third wall and the pretense that we're all supposed to hold together, that life is like, we're professionals. It's like, no, we're a whole bunch of animals, sacks of like flesh
literally
flapping around planet Earth.
I love it. I think it's although there's been a lot of negatives, I think out of it, I really hope a lot of people can take positives out of it. And I don't know about you, if you've seen it kind of in the music industry, there's been some people that it's hit really hard, and kind of they've fallen off. But I think there's also a lot of people that have like really like refocused their lives and kind of found out that just doing the same old grind that we do every weekend isn't necessarily for them. And how do you change that up, and how do you make money elsewhere as well? Do you want to go back to touring?
Definitely, because I think it's one of the things I'm best at, which is really frustrating because it, you know, I think it is one of my most essential elements of my skill set.
Mm.
And it's something that I get a lot of spirit out of, but I think that it has to be re-approached completely. And I think that it's going to look different on the other side. Mm. Even just,
how do you mean?
I'm starting now to put, just, I'm not going to tour as constantly. It's going to be like releasing a thing and then touring it, you know, which I think in a way, it's really confusing for me, because I don't know about you. You've been in the game a long time, but like, I'm just putting my phone on do not disturb so I can see someone texting me. I've been in the game a long time, and I started when in Australia you could just be a DJ and not make and release music. Yeah. You could be like a big touring DJ. So I wasn't by any means a big touring DJ, but I definitely had like a solid touring career.
Yeah.
By 2007, and I started making music in 2007, didn't release anything till 2010.
Mm.
So there was like a 3-year period where I'm still DJing a lot, playing all big festivals and not releasing my own music until 2009 or 10. And then the music was always playing catch up to the gigs.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, I've never been able to have the luxury of making without thinking about gigs. And it was always an approach that frustrated me and felt like I was on the back foot. So there's been that's been really nice. I've spent a lot of time in the studio in the last maybe a year now, you know, since I got resettled in Australia. I've been quite productive and filled in a lot of gaps in my production capabilities that, you know, I needed to and whatever. I just had a lot more time to sit with everything and work out a true sound that I'm ready to commit to, instead of just having 3 weeks off touring, bashing out some songs and being like, yeah, I can make them work, and then like doing that. So that's been a really cool thing for me. And I think that in the position I'm in life now, where I've actually toured nonstop for 13, 15, whatever years, I don't want to do it in the set. I don't need to be out there every weekend now. It's going to look a little different, but I still want to be out there for sure. And I still think that, there's a lot to gain from being in that game. I love it a lot.
And
you know what was cool is that I got to stop and ask myself if I wanted to go back in, and I still decided to go back in.
Well, I think the fact that you've spent a year in the studio as well means that you still want to do it, right? I think.
Totally.
I think that's the
thing. There's no one here. It's just me and like in a room all my own. Mm. If you can, that's exactly right. And that was the quest. That was the thinking, like, what's going to keep me excited every day? I just need to feel good every day. Mm. So what am I going to do to feel good every day? And it turned out, luckily, to be making music.
If it wasn't, you'd be absolutely fucked now anyway.
I start crocheting. I'm like, actually, I really love knitting. I'm just into color palettes right now. But yeah.
Yeah, it's that's good. That's exciting. I didn't know you were a DJ before a producer. How was that kind of starting out in Australia? Because Australia is a whole different world to the rest of the world.
Australia is a different world, and I'm remembering it again now that I'm back. It's actually crazy. There's a whole ecosystem for the music here that it exists on an island, and there's a lot of acts here that are really big that don't tour America and just are really big here, you know, and you face all that as you come back, because on one hand, you come back as someone who's bigger overseas.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, some of the metrics aren't as important as like who's got the local ticket sales and who's doing this. So it's been quite an education. So it's a bit of a hodgepodge of an industry, because it's a small country and we only have a certain amount of people. And so there's only a certain amount of scenes that can thrive really well.
Mm.
So if you're into a sound that's not thriving at that time,
it
might thrive in 3 years, but for whatever reason, it's not thriving now, you really have nowhere to play.
Yeah.
So what it meant for me was I could do anything, like put me in a room and I could play like for this kind of crowd, that kind of crowd, yeah. big room, small room, house, techno, hip hop, rap. Like I could play dance hall, like I could play everything, disco sets. Like, so I literally spent the first 3 years just jack of all trading it, like kind of just like classic local DJ style. And I'm grateful for that musical education because I always dive hard, you know, like even if I had to do a 1 hour support slot for Disclosure or a 1 hour support slot for A-Track or 1 hour support slot for who else I do, like back when, you know, in the tropical house days, it was like Solo or Mum Dance or, you know, whether it was Elvis 9090 or the Night Slugs guys, whatever, or the more kind, you know, so I was all on all those shows. MIA was my first big sport. So no matter what the show was, I just dived so hard into whatever genre it was. And I'm happy for all that education. And I still have every one of my favorite achievements is that I have all the songs that I've ever played still in my iTunes.
That's
so like I have all of your little bootlegs that you made 100 years ago and put on SoundCloud for a free download. I have them all.
No way.
So it's great. It's like a funny thing that I always
That's so wild to me because I didn't know you knew who I was until like I honestly thought like I knew who you were, but I honestly didn't think you knew who I was until like 2 years ago.
No, I mean, we never had much crossover, but from Australia, we looked at overseas all the time. So like Australia has that small town mentality where you think that everything that's happening overseas is where the action is.
Yeah.
Even though there's times when Australia is kind of leading certain sounds, but like more often than not, it was actually really sweet. Like DJs would come to town and my group of friends would be throwing the parties and we'd put on the barbecue and we'd like cook a big, we have a party for them. And we were so excited to have them and to see what they'd play. Like Sinden used to come out here and we'd throw parties for him and we'd all get together on a Thursday and have a big barbecue. And then he'd play on the Friday night and then we'd get him a gig in Melbourne on a Saturday. And like, that was a really big deal for us because we were on all the message boards. We were, you know, following everything but felt so far away. So like I kind of I've always been like a really big fan of electronic music and a fan of electronic musicians, and then I moved to America and sort of got in the game officially, but in a lot of ways, like for years before that, I was already like the most ultimate voyeur and the most ultimate like nerd keeping track of everything.
What was the bridge between, like, what was the point when you're like, I have to go to America? And why America?
Well, there was a few reasons. Oh, that's a good question. Why America? So I had started going over there because I had a family friend who was a hip-hop DJ in New York, and she invited me to come assist her because she always needed people to help her out. So I like went and stayed with her for a few months and sort of saw things firsthand. And I was like, oh, I can do this. And so I met some people and then I started getting booked to play like fashion events in New York. And so I'd fly, I'd get like some sweet gig DJing for Prada. And then I'd book all the gigs through Brooklyn the same night. So I'd have a car service from the Prada gig and I'd have a $3,000 outfit on that they'd lent me for the night, and then I'd go and play at like Jubilee's party in Brooklyn later with like
sick.
You know, all these guys. So and then I'd rock up in like a car service and they're like, who is this girl? But I was just like, I don't know, like I played disco at this fashion event for an hour, they gave me this outfit in this car, and now I'm coming to play for you guys for $75.
That's so good. I love that.
So that's sort of like the way that it started, where I just sort of used these amazing opportunities, which I was lucky to find, I was lucky to be able to do, probably because I had so much genre experience and so many, you know, I had 4 or 5 years of that experience under my belt. I sort of worked out this weird thing where I would put together a tour with all the artists that I've been supporting in Australia. So I'd email them and be like, oh, I'm coming to town. They're like, okay, cool. We do a party on Tuesdays. So if you can get to Baltimore on Tuesday, we can pay you $50 or $100 to play on a Tuesday night. I'd be like, sweet, I'll be there. Mm. And I did. So I did that like 3 or 4 times. I went over in 2009, I went over twice. 2010, I went over once, I think. But that's when I started doing Ministry of Sound in Australia, so I was pretty busy.
Okay. Was that with and Paul? Was that with Paul Azpadari?
Paul Sticks?
Paul Azpadari.
Oh, Paul Azpadari. No, yeah. I've been playing for Paul Azpadari since 2007. Paul Azpadari doesn't work for Ministry. He works for Chinese Laundry, which is like a big club there.
But he...
And they were...
He works for Ministry. It's not called Ministry though now, is it? It's called Poster Child.
No, it's called Tomorrow or something.
Oh, they've changed but their I name so many times.
Maybe Paul works there now, but he wasn't working there then. He was working at Chinese Laundry. He was like the head booker at Chinese Laundry.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, Ministry of Sound was basically like every kid got a Ministry of Sound CD for Christmas or every second kid. And then I was the first woman to mix one of those 2010. Yeah, it was cool. That's so I did that and big like tours across Australia and stuff, which felt like a really big deal at the time.
Ministry was massive in Australia. Ministry had
it was
like
huge.
It was massive in the UK because it was exactly the same situation. It's like everyone got given it at Christmas. It was like a big thing. And then I didn't realize how big it was because it was Trent, wasn't it?
Trent Rackett.
Yeah, Trent, what a legend. Uh-huh. Love that guy.
he's funny.
Yeah, I
remember. He's a kid, so I played for Ministry last week, just a side note. And his daughter, who was like born when I started working for them, was at the club in front of my, you know what I mean? It's like, what?
Yeah, that's crazy. It's mad when like I was played Crossfest and it wasn't Crossed, it was Day Moves, like in the summer. And MK brought his like 13-year-old daughter there. And I was like, this is just wild. But it's so amazing to see. There's something about like that was like the first time that she'd ever seen him play. She didn't really know what he did. And I was like, it made me want to cry to a certain extent. I was like, this is just like perfect. Just because it's like, it's so nice to see families experiences together. Because what we do is no one really experiences it apart from our mates. If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's kind of.
It feels like you live a double life. Like right 100%. Now, I'm an undercover DJ hanging around with moms at my daycare.
Sometimes
they find out who I am and they're like, oh my God, I just saw your Instagram. Oh, this is so weird. I'm like, oh God, okay. Yeah. Oh, and she was like, oh my God, I know. I think you're such a badass. And I was like, moms are the most badass people on the whole planet. What we do is literally, I can tell you, it's not as hard as having kids, being a DJ and doing all this. It is not as hard.
Giving birth.
This is what I do for fun now.
Yeah, just giving birth in its own is just something completely different that nobody else is.
Oh my God.
Yeah, fuck that.
The joke.
So sorry.
Surprised that any of us make it.
Yeah, right. It's nature's wild, and
truly.
And then it's us men complaining that we've got a cold. It's awful. We're so weak. Have you seen those TikTok videos of like those dudes like having like electric things put on their stomach? And it's like...
And imitating contractions and stuff.
And they're just like creeping out. It's hilarious. Sorry, I kind of butted in, but we were in the story of going from touring Ministry to the US.
Yeah. So then by like 2011, I decided. And basically I'd reached a point in Australia where I'd done everything that they were going to allow me to do. Mm. Like in Australia at the time... As a local DJ, you were never going to play past 2 p.m. at a festival, which is fair enough. I mean, you know, but they booked all the internationals, so you could only play by 2 p.m. And there's only like three or four at the time big touring electronic festivals.
Yeah.
And I'd done all of them so many times that it was like, well, all that can happen now is that like someone else comes along and they choose them instead of me. And like, I know I'm really good at this. And I know that, you know, I'm playing with all these big DJs and crushing it. And like, I think I'm making music as well, but like, I feel like I'm just needing to be in a different environment to kind of take that next step and grow. So I convinced my partner, my husband, to move with me. I took him on a trip to LA. So we were like, let's go on a holiday. So like, okay, well, let's go to America. And then we'll do this road trip and I'll play some gigs in LA and then we'll go to, where did we go again? We went to like San Francisco and we drove down to LA and then we flew to New York and I did some gigs there. It's like a working holiday, but like we're driving down the highway one, down Big Sur, and it's like the blue skies, the flowers up the mountain, the sea on the side, and I'm like, babe, let's move here, let's never go there. He's just like, yeah. And I was like, nailed it.
You had that planned the whole time, didn't you? You had that.
Look, I'm not gonna lie, it was always on the agenda, but I just picked my moment. Everything's timing, Will. So I picked my moment perfectly, and he was down for it, even though he was kind of scared. But he was in a stage in his life where he could take the risk. Mm. You know, he was had a business that could run from there,
cool,
that he'd started, that he's, you know, it was something that he no longer does. But he had enough flexibility in his life where he felt like he could do it. And so he did. And it was so invigorating because I just started again. And it really was, you know, incredible learning time. Like it was the bigger leagues. It was like incredible to ask so much more of myself and to live up to my own expectations. And I played Coachella 2 years later, like less. I think I played Coachella in 2013. I moved in 2012. So like it confirmed what I already knew, which was that like in some levels I have what it takes to go big. I just haven't had the right tools or the right kind of like opportunities, but I know that I'm really good at this. And I really wanted to prove to myself that I was as good as I thought I could be.
Yeah.
And that's what I set out to do.
What was it that kind of, when you got to America, that changed it to go from where you were like just touring around to then playing Coachella and things like that? Was there like a specific moment?
It was more of the same. It was just me continuing on, like getting different opportunities and some bigger stages to play on. Like Australia just didn't have the opportunities that I wanted it to have to keep me growing.
Yeah.
So I just kept growing and kept doing what I'd always done, and kept working on music and kept, you know, meeting people and working towards like this bigger goal of just requiring the most out of myself. And I really did do that. I took it all the way to like stupid levels of productivity and pushing myself
on like so was that more so writing, or was that absolutely everything, from like literally
everything,
every show to
touring, every show, every like all the release schedule, the radio, the all the other things I was doing on the side? Like I've always done all of that, and I just pushed it and just squeezed the absolute most that I could out of myself for like a good 4 years. I was at max capacity for everything. Yeah. And I kept having babies in between that, which was just ridiculous.
How many kids do you have now?
Two.
What's that like, having kids whilst doing that?
Like the most unbelievable marathon you've ever run. Like, you know, when you come back from a week away of shows, or like a month of hard touring, imagine that you get the 6 a.m. flight back on Sunday, and then you have kids dropped in your lap by 2 p.m. and you're babysitting, you're taking care of them, and just on your feet running around and saying, just like, there's no downtime.
Yeah.
Whatever downtime and balance you had before, you do not have anymore. So that's the start of it. And then, of course, there's the physical requirements of like breastfeeding a child and touring with a breast pump and pumping on planes, pumping next to sleeping old men on planes, and like storing breast milk in every hotel you go and sending it back, and, you know, crying because the hotel lost the milk that you pumped and now you don't have enough milk for your baby.
Yeah.
It's like there's, you know, the time that I used to spend perfecting my sets went.
Yeah.
The time that I used to spend, you know, I just had to make sacrifices.
Totally.
But at the same time, what I will say is that it gave me the opportunity to be hyper productive. Mm. Like I was able to do so much more because I had this capacity that I never had before I had children.
Yeah.
Like when I think about what I did before I had children, I just didn't have even nearly the capacity that I do now.
Yeah, I've had so many conversations with people, and it either goes, and I've said this before on the podcast, but it either goes two ways that I've, from an outside point of view, is that having kids either makes you super productive and your career just takes off, even more, because you're so like, time is so valuable. So you have to make every bit of time that you have
worth it.
Or go completely the opposite, where it just goes kids take over and career goes down the pan.
I can see how both things happen too. Because like even now, I think so much of it as well is your support systems.
Totally.
And what you're able to rig up. Like that thing, I was walking this tightrope and I was fortunate that I have certain support systems at that time.
Yeah.
But then with the COVID, they got ripped away.
Yeah.
So all the productivity that I was able to do before the pandemic, I was no longer able to sustain because I didn't have the support network that I had. So that's the thing. Like I kind of have this weird feeling when I post about something and people are like, oh, it's so amazing that you're able to do this with kids. And I feel almost bad because I want to say that's not the whole story. Yeah. And like, I can only do this because of this. Mm. And I can only do this because I have a supportive partner who can do this.
Yeah.
Like the privilege and the support system behind you is what allows you to do it. Like, totally. Yes, I show up and I work hard, but without that, I couldn't do it actually. Yeah. So I don't want anyone comparing their journey to mine because they might not have the support systems that I have right now.
But I might not have the support systems
that I have in a month.
I guess to play devil's advocate on that and kind of throw yourself a bit of a bone is you've worked hard to get those support systems. And of course, you're extremely fortunate that you're in that situation to have that. But you work fucking hard. I literally remember talking to Mika, aka Born Dirty, and was like, how the fuck does Anna do it? Like have kids, be pregnant and still touring. And I remember seeing a video of you like fully pregnant and touring. And I'm like, this is wild. Like take a break, girl. But also you're right. I don't see the behind the scenes. I don't see the team behind you. I don't see your partner behind you, like actually making all of that doable for you.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, it was interesting when I was pregnant because people would see you for 45 minutes or an hour once a week, you know, like I could be lying down horizontally the rest of that time. Whereas if I worked in the store, if I worked in an office, I would be on my feet or at work from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. So in a lot of ways, being pregnant while touring, the travel was tough, but my work I can do from bed when I need to. Like I made many radio shows in bed.
Yeah.
And I really did just try to take care of myself. And it really, I was lucky because even though I got sick in my pregnancy, that wasn't related to anything with this. That was related to some organ stuff that I have genetic like organ issue on this particular thing. And my physicality and my skeleton, so lots of women get bad hips and backs. Mm. I never got that. So my physical strength when I was pregnant was really powerful. Like I could jump off. I was like jumping off the decks and stuff.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, what the fuck is she doing? Like, this is crazy.
I felt really good. And I DJed the whole time. Yeah. So all the muscles that I use to do these things that I've done for 15 years, my body just got stronger and I was able to stay dancing and stay moving. And in many ways, DJing was the only time that I felt like myself because my body was getting taken over by this alien that was like absorbing all my nutrients and making me hugely bigger. But that's when I felt like myself.
Mm.
So in a mental way, it really tied me back into my own identity in a way that it's very easy to get lost in when you're pregnant.
100%. So, 100%, and I think that's super important. It's like anything, it's so easy to get caught up in things, right? And whether that's your job, whether that's a relationship, whether that's anything, is you still need time for yourself and to kind of reflect and learn about life and sit back at it all and be like, yeah, I'm happy right now, or I'm not happy right now, or what do I need to do to do this. So it was kind of amazing to see you still do that. Like I was pretty amazed, to be fair.
Thank you. I will take that as a compliment because
it definitely is.
Now when I look back on it, I feel proud of myself.
Yeah,
now.
Definitely.
When I look back now, because I know that it wasn't easy, but I'm happy that I was able to do it.
Yeah. How did the whole radio thing start with you?
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Radio started before I DJed.
Yeah, I didn't know this, but I kind of got the idea that this was beforehand.
So I started volunteering at a Sydney station called FBI, which you might know, have gone here,
yeah.
Which is like the KCRW, like young youth station,
yeah.
That had just started when I left uni, or left school, dropped out of uni, and I started volunteering at the station, just meeting people and doing all-nighters,
yeah.
on the radio. And then through that, I started DJing because I started getting asked to like curate music for an art gallery opening or like a store opening because it was all community driven. So yeah. They had sponsors of the station, which would be like the local art gallery.
Yeah.
So then the art gallery would be throwing a party and they're like, oh, does one of the FBI DJs want to come and like play music or program the music? And we would get paid in like free drinks. So I was like, yeah, let's go. And that's how I started DJing. So the radio was first, and then I worked on that station till I left for America in 2012.
Mm.
And then Zane Lowe contacted me about doing FBI, doing Apple Music in 2015. So that was like yeah. 4 years or 3 or 4 years where I wasn't doing radio. And then they were looking for someone for Apple Music to do the dance, to do a dance show.
Did you know Zane beforehand?
He had premiered a song of mine, but it was a song with Teed, with yeah. Totally Anonymous Extinct Dinosaurs, and I think he was more of a Teed fan, didn't really know who I was.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the link, but he said that they had a list of people, and then he listened to some mixes of mine online and saw me in an interview talking about how I started on community radio, yeah. And that was what he needed to hear. So that's really lucky.
Zane's like one of my idols. I literally, yeah, like, yeah, I grew up.
Me too.
I grew up listening to him on the BBC.
I bet.
Like he is like one of the reasons why I listen to a lot of the music I listen to. Like I remember working in a fish and chip shop, listening to him at like 7 till 9. I was washing the dishes. And like, I kind of, he was like my musical education when I was like a teenager.
That's awesome.
Yeah. What's it like working at Apple?
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So I just remember my first meeting with Zane. I mean, it came out of nowhere for me. Like in my head, I'm just doing gigs, hustling, trying to like make my DJ career happen in America and feeling like things are happening, but it's still really hard for me.
Yeah.
And I get a notification like Zane Lowe's followed you on Twitter. And I was like, that's weird. And then the next week I end up with him at like Will.i.am's studio in Hollywood. And it's called The Future. And it's like, there's no corners. It's just bendy materials everywhere. And Zane was just like, look, you know what you're doing. How about you just make the best radio show you can? And I was like, okay.
I
had to deliver it to 2 days later, I sent through my first radio show that I produced myself. Like, luckily I had all those years of experience.
Yeah.
So I was just like, okay, 2 hours, how long? Okay, what can I do? Okay.
Yeah.
I delivered it. He's like, perfect. It's going to air on Friday. I was like,
what?
Okay. And then there was this launch and it was like, I had to keep it on the down low for a month. That's right. It was a month before my show went to air. And I think I did get to do some tweaks or update the music or something, but it was like, cool, yep, that's, we love it. But you can't tell anyone for a month because we're going to do this big launch. And then when I saw the launch, I was really shooting myself because I was like, my show's after Q-Tip's show? And it's like, Dr. Dre,
yeah.
Q-Tip, My Show, and then I can't remember the lineup, but it was just like
Imposter
Elton
Syndrome.
John. Like, it was, oh my God, I was like, what am I doing on this? Who? How did this happen? I felt completely just overwhelmed with what the hell was going on. And I still remember on the first show, Q-Tip DM'd me on Twitter and was like, yo, you're a beast. And like,
no,
I'm getting
way.
All these messages on Twitter. And I was just like, what the hell is happening to me right now? It was so cool.
That's amazing.
It was incredible. It was such a cool moment. I can't believe that actually happened to me. So, yeah. I mean, the experiences, I mean, you know what it's like when all you do is care about music. The only thing that matters to you is when people you admire acknowledge your...
Whatever you do.
Whatever you do. That's all that matters to you, really.
It's so
wild.
It's
all that matters. Like,
yeah, because anyone...
It'll never get old.
It never will, and it will never... Like, you can have... your mum, your dad, who your mate, your best mate say that they like something from you, but it means nothing. And really, until somebody that you've always looked up to is like, I love your shit, keep it up. It's the best feeling.
Definitely hits a certain bone.
Who that, was it that for you that's done it the most where you're like, oh yeah, I've made it?
Oh, I don't know that I've made it.
But you know what I mean, because realistically, I think your mindset's pretty similar to mine. We never really make it. We never. There's always something better to do. There's always a way to kind of push forward. But what was the point in your career where you're like, okay, this is pretty amazing feeling?
I think there's been a few little ones. I think that for me, my best skill has been my grit. So for like, I don't know that there's been that many times when I've gotten that much of, I know I just told that extreme story about the Apple Music launch. That was one of the moments.
Yeah.
But I think that if I'm completely honest, it's been a lot of those little versions of that.
Yeah,
I don't think that there's been anyone who's really said that to me. And I think that, what's kept me going is me being like determined to prove something to myself more than any external validation. But there's definitely been moments that I felt really proud of. Like, I was really happy with like, a lot of my songs aren't very friendly for other DJs to play. They're really just constructed for me to play in my sets. And I think that, you know, like when 303 did really well and people really, other DJs were playing that, I was really proud of that, because that was like, it's one thing for the audience to really love your songs because they like to listen to them at home, but having lots of DJs playing them is really nice.
Such
too.
Nice.
So feeling. That was a nice moment. And yeah, there was a few DJs that reached out to me at that time and really acknowledged it. And same when I did, Bass Drum Dealer, I remember there was some really like just little things. Honestly, it's just like a big DJ tweeting it and being like, this song's really fresh.
Yeah,
you know, just that's all really that keeps you going when have doubts. And I can definitely remember exactly who it was, and I definitely screenshotted it, but I feel a bit silly.
Go on,
saying
say
like,
it. Go on.
Such and such tweeted, wow, this is hot! Exclamation mark emoji. Like, I feel like a bit of a doofus, so I'm not going to do that, but. Yes, there were some of those moments.
Yeah, it's a nice feeling. It's stroking our egos to a certain extent, right? We need it stroked a little bit now and again.
Yeah, which you do need, because you also get shat on all the time.
Yeah, like
by like people on the internet. So you do need to have that balance. I'm
not
gonna be shy about that.
Did you get that often though? People talking shit.
I have like one or two people who've come for me over the years. And I've been pretty lucky, and I think that's because I'm not that big.
Yeah.
I think the bigger you get, the more you get a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Same for me. I never really get, you always get one dickhead, but they're probably just having a bad day.
Yeah.
It's their loss.
Yeah. And it's usually they're like mad because they want to do it.
Exactly.
And they take it out on you a bit, which I get because I had so many years as a local DJ and so many years where I really wanted to be in the big leagues and I wasn't. I definitely would like in those early years would be like in my head, like they're not even that good. I could do that, you know? So I do understand where they're coming from. Like sometimes when I see, if I see someone be like, oh, blah, 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 I feel like writing to them being like, keep going, you can make it. Like I kind of want to just be really encouraging to them and be like, you're just mad because you want to just keep going. Yeah. You can do it too.
Jealousy is a thing, isn't it? It's a real thing. We all have it. Yeah. We all have it.
We all have it.
What's with the radio show? How important is it to you finding and pushing new artists? Because I know you do that.
That's all the basis of everything I've always done. Like it's the same as my first radio show. It's always been about making sure the conversation is steering in the most exciting, authentic direction as possible. Because the machine that dance music lives in and the ways in which it feeds up the algorithm and like finds its way to popularity, it needs different things thrown in as much as it possibly can to get good stuff to the top. And I just see my role as being like continuously throwing the best ideas in the pot as I can. Mm. That's what I can do to help the conversation, and I take it pretty seriously. Yeah. So like, especially when I did Hypher House, which was my first show on Apple Music, I just made sure that I was representing every corner of like every corner that I could of underground to underground dance music. Anything that's like peaking its way up that is like ready to be heard by a global audience, I was going to do my best to understand it and to put on as many people as I could. That was my whole goal. And now I host a different show now, and I have 20 minutes of mixing and I can pick like 6 songs a week.
Yeah.
And it's still that. I'm still just trying to elevate those people who are really pushing it, because you know what it's like. Like there's like this whole army of people pushing ideas and pushing sounds, and then they creep their way up to the top of the pyramid, and then it gets pretty co-opted up there. Gets a bit murky up there. So you want the people who are really pushing those sounds to begin with to get the shine as well, and make sure they stay a part of the story wherever you can.
Yeah, I think it's really important, and I think there's not many outlets that can do it apart from radio. I think there's not always an agenda, but radio is probably the most authentic way that actually happens. The way streaming platforms do kind of support new artists, of course, but I think a lot of it really is still looked at from radio, because I know like the BBC and with Apple Music and things like that, it is about supporting the artist and kind of building a story out of who's this new artist. Is there anybody that you've kind of, you were like the first person that you're like?
Heaps, but I won't say who, because I feel so silly. Like I know it in my heart that I might have been a part of their story, but I would never claim it because it's like that's their story, you know?
But I don't think it's about claiming I found them first, but like is there anybody that you're like, I really supported these at the beginning and now I'm so proud of where they're at now?
This is going to sound funny, but like Disclosure.
Yeah.
So like Disclosure's first EP, like it was before I left for America, and I found it and I was telling everyone about it. I was playing it on the radio. I gave it out at the radio station. I even tweeted once, I don't know who's doing Australian PR for Disclosure at the moment, but I should be doing it because I'd play like, and they DM'd me. I can definitely prove this. It'll be in my DMs. Yeah. And they DM'd me saying, hey, can you please email our management? And like, thought that I did PR and was like, hey, we're actually looking for someone in Australia. Can you DM the management? And I was like, oh, okay. I'm not in PR. I'm sorry. But I do like, I have been really pushing your music. And I actually had just done a song with Flume, and I played Disclosure for Flume for the first time. And I was like, hey, we should get Disclosure to remix our track.
Wow.
And so he sent it to Future Classic and was like, hey, Anna had this idea to get these guys. Oh no, I sent it and was like, hey, we should get Disclosure to remix it. And they were like, they were like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. Mm. And of course, that's like, and I also played, so when we filmed the video clip for me and Flume's song, I played him Hudmo and I played him Disclosure on the way. And he was like, whoa, and like blew his mind. I made him a mix and I like gave it to him. And it's so funny because it's like his sound definitely changed after that.
Totally.
And sort of morphed, which was cool. So that was a cool moment. And then actually Chad from Future Classic, we're in Mexico watching Flume. This is in like 2015. He's like, you know, we often think about, like, we actually talked about it the other day. We were like, Anna was the one who sent us Disclosure for the first time. Like, that was a pretty good spot from you. And I was like,
claim to fame.
Like, yeah, okay. But like, I'm literally like, that's all I do. But I love it how they were like, it took them for that to be like, yeah.
Took them years.
Like, yeah, to acknowledge it. I'm like, yeah, cool.
I actually love the Flume remix of Disclosure, the You and Me record. I think that's my favorite.
Isn't it major?
It's my favorite Flume.
I remember I was at Coachella that year when they played it for the first time, and the crowd just like, it was like a swamp. It was just like, the air got sucked out of the stadium. It was crazy.
Those guys, Disclosure and Flume, but Disclosure especially, just, they just changed the scene, like, so quickly.
They were so talented from the first.
They still are, but they're just doing different stuff now. Oh, God, yeah.
They're still even more talented. But it's like, from the jump, fully realized, just like leagues ahead of everyone. It was just so comprehensive. And you could tell it from the first song. It was so impressive.
Yeah, it was amazing. I love that. I don't think we've had that for a while. Someone just come on the scene and be like, here we fucking are. Do you know anyone?
Oh.
Camel Fat definitely did at some point. But it's still very different.
Really? So something that I'm really bad at is plucking names out of a hat. I have to be like, you have to say the name and then I can say stuff. But like, if anyone says name your top five, I'm completely useless. For some reason, my categorizing in my brain just doesn't work that way. Who has recently come out like crazy strong?
LP has. But it's different. It's not, it's more so music wise. It's different.
Yeah, I mean, she's smashing it. I'm trying to think. Sorry, my brain's in like, I'm like scanning things, trying to think of, because it's a combination of production, identity, branding, and then writing, having the full understanding of also the writing and the sort of melodic structure. I'm totally blanking. I'm going to have to like look at my iTunes and come back to you.
Yeah, it's mad. It's also been strange with music. How did you find it over the like kind of pandemic side of things, like looking for new music? And I don't know how often you like play your records from the radio show at your sets or anything like that. Or is it just purely when you're kind of programming your radio, your show, it's like, this is just radio. This has got nothing to do with my music, with my DJ sets. This is just purely what I like for radio.
It goes in waves where the focus will be, you know, maybe like 20% radio focus and then 80% of Anna Luno DJ focus. I mean, there's definitely crossover between those two things. So it just goes, on a sliding scale of how much I'm trying to push into the radio or like what, like how much I can push on that particular platform. Like, where I am now with my radio show, I only get to pick 6 songs. So I might pick 4 songs that I personally just love and can't wait to play out, and then 2 songs that I feel really need to be on the radio because I wouldn't necessarily play them out, but I feel that they're a really solid effort and they need to be put on air.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Is it weird doing a radio show when it's playlisted?
What do you mean when it's playlisted?
As in you don't have full creative control.
Sorry. I was thinking about like playlisted after like for privacy reasons or whatever. And I'm thinking it's always been that way. When it's playlisted, I mean, it's definitely different, but I also know that, you know, I get that small window to do what I do. Totally. And I get to have a certain amount of sway over the playlist and of what's chosen from the playlist. So, you know, I have ways that I can push certain things, and I love doing it. Yeah. I love hosting the show, and I would rather that I was doing it than anybody else, because I can still do what I'm passionate about doing.
Do you get to play your own records
on the radio?
Yeah. Or do you?
Yeah, but I actually am weirdly shy about it. Yeah. I make myself do it, but I will only play them once. Yeah. Like, I won't play them and flog it. I'll play them once and be like, I did this week. It's out. Like, go check it out. Mm. And that's it. I think it's relevant as well for the audience who get to know you as well.
Totally.
It builds
a bigger story as well, doesn't it? You're not saying that this is small, but you're not just the radio DJ.
Right.
Some people probably just listen to you as the radio DJ, right? And don't know
for sure
the other side of your career. Super important.
For sure. And I think because Apple, they asked me to do it, knowing that I had this established totally. Career that they have absorbed my me as an artist as well.
No, totally, totally. So do you know any dates when you're going to go back to America?
We're talking through some dates at the moment, but I can't say for sure anything yet.
Yeah.
But definitely in the first few months of next year.
Amazing, amazing. Let's wrap this up. We've pretty much just done an hour, but is there a way
that was easy. You're a good talker, Will. I totally, that flew by.
Super quick. Is there a way like new artists can kind of send you music, or is that something that you don't?
Yeah. So what I have one requirement. I always say you need to find my email. Like, just find, I can't give it out online because I listen to everything that I get. So if you can ask around, maybe if you can get my email, my promo email, and send me songs, I promise I'll listen to them. But if I give, it's purely a time restriction. I can't physically do it if the email gets overwhelming. So as long as you can find, like, work out how to get to that email address, I will promise I'll listen to it.
I love that. I love that. Anna, thanks so much for coming on. It's been really good fun to talk.
Thank you for having me. I feel like we honestly scratched the surface. I know, just getting warmed up.
I know, we could literally just go on forever. But we'll have to do it again. I want to start doing these in person with people. Because I think it's just so much nicer rather than doing it over Zoom. But because I started this in the pandemic, it's like kind of just got used to doing it on Zoom. But I really want to maybe like try and set up like one a month in person where it's like filmed. And I think that's when you can really get into it and have like a full on conversation. I think it's just different in person, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, congratulations to you for starting your pod in the pandemic and really doing something with it. And I do a podcast too. I know how much work it is.
I did not know you did a podcast. Tell me about this.
Oh yeah. I started it I have had it on my list on my board for like a year when I came back for Australia, but I only just got it done like in the last few months.
Yeah.
So there's 5 episodes online now. It's called Create Destroy.
Okay.
So it's all about creativity. And so it's having this kind of long form conversation with artists that focused on creative flow, creative hacks. So yeah, that's online now. So I did Chris Lake, Totally Enormous Extinct Dinosaurs is up, Boys Noise drops next week, Aluna George, Michael Braun, Latin Grammy Award winning producer, and TT the Artist, who's a film director and musician.
That's dope.
So that's been online so far. And then still to come this season, I've got Banks and Tisha and Boys Noise I mentioned, and then that will be the first season, and then I'll take a break and finish my EP.
So you're going to do them in seasons?
Yeah, I think I'm going to do like eight episodes blocks, and then take a little break from it and get other things done. I'm spending a lot of time on it, so I'm going to need to
cut that back. How is it being, like, is it do you edit it all and kind of, because I'm just lazy as fuck. I literally just, this conversation doesn't get edited unless you ask me to edit something out. And it's just like gets put up on YouTube, done, and people can listen to it at Spotify, Apple Music, all of that. How do you do the podcast?
Yeah, I fully edit it. So I spend a lot of time editing because often the creative, like the conversations are really meandering.
Yeah.
And it takes a little minute for the person to find their point,
totally,
or to find the direction of where they're going with their answer, because it's quite a deep convo that takes some. Even now, I'm starting to stutter just trying to explain it, which is not a good sign. But yeah, it's very much like about creative process, about creative challenge, about overcoming and deeper kind of emotional stuff like that. So I find that when I edit it, the points are much more easy to decipher.
Yeah.
And also I come from a radio background that's so edited. Yeah. So I think it's just my ego and my natural need for it to be like slick. But I think that there's something really beautiful about free flow conversation as well that maybe makes people feel a lot more comfortable listening to it. So I'm not sure which is the better way to do it, but for whatever reason I'm editing it heavily.
I think it's different, right? Is you have different things for different horses for different courses, as they say. Like,
yeah,
with this podcast, like, it's very get to hear two people talk and see where it goes, if you know what I mean. And people like to listen to that, but then by the sounds of yours, it's quite like not educational but also educational, when people know what they're gonna get out of that podcast, whereas this is like no one knows what we're gonna fucking talk about until we actually talk about something.
And there's a lot of learning that happens in that too, and a lot of discovery too. There's different ways of like sharing connection, knowledge,
definitely. Yeah. Well, let's do it. I want to do, when I'm back in LA and when you're in LA, I'd love to get you and Mika and do a podcast together, and just like,
definitely,
and maybe get LP, just like get a crew of us and just have like a proper nice time and do it for
that would be awesome.
Yeah,
be so nice. I think as well, like everyone, all of the people that we see on the road that we have great relationships with, but then when the road is not there, we really miss each other too. And it's like, I think it was, there's so many passive people, passive relationships that I had that were giving me so much that I was shocked to feel the gaping hole that they left behind when I no longer was like bumping into whatever random person at whatever random gig. So yeah, that is part of the healing, I think, for us all, just to spend a lot more time together and sharing more.
I think that's it. It's also being real with each other as well. It's like actually like having the opportunity to talk to somebody that kind of understands what you're going through at the same time, because nobody else understands this. And that's not putting us in like an elitist kind of lane. Just nobody understands what we do because no one else does it apart from us, if that makes sense. Like I can't understand anything from somebody else. Like, so I think just having people around that you can have a conversation with and be real. Like I've had so many conversations with like Mika and Chris and a few other people during the pandemic, and like where you're like, we wouldn't have spoken like that before the pandemic with each other, if you know what I mean. I feel like it's really helped people talk about their feelings, which is so important. Like my mum's a therapist, and my whole life it's been like, talk about your feelings, blah 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 blah. And it's actually really nice when you can have somebody that is in the same industry as you, is in the same situation as you, and you can both like, you can both have a shit day and you can both talk about it and be like, okay, cool, like we've got this. I think it's super important.
Oh my god, it's being heard, the most important thing in the entire world. It is therapy in itself. I think like part of the reason why I decided to do my podcast was because I would do like quick radio interviews about someone's song, and we'd end up talking for 45 minutes about like what we had to overcome to get the single out. And none of it was really like able to go to air, but it didn't matter, because we just needed to, the artist needed to talk about it. And then I thought, like, there are people that need to hear this. Totally. Because when you're making music, you don't even know that the artist that you love so much had this much doubt and this much process to deliver it to you. And that's part of the story. And, like, it's almost a disservice to pretend like it's not there. Exactly. It's almost a disservice to our audience to be like, here we go, just whipped this out. Like, oh, so easy. Let's go party, rage. Like, let's go. It's like, what can we teach what can we share deeply with our audience that's going to make them closer to achieving what they want in life?
And and you're right. And whether that's actually not in music, is whether that's doing whatever they want to do. I think we can all relate to each other when we're struggling or when we're happy or when we're whatever. It's just being able to hear that, like, we have people that really follow us and really care about us, but they don't actually know us. They just know our music. And I think we live in a day and age where people want to know you and people have access to get to know you. It's just how much you're willing to give out to them. And I think by hearing people talk is a way where they can learn and make their day feel better.
Yeah. And I think that we're in this situation with social media where people expect to get to know us on our Instagrams and see what we're having for breakfast. And for me personally, like, I feel much more comfortable sharing deeply about my overcomings and my fears and challenges professionally. Like, for me, I would rather tell them those real things than like anything very real and personal about my journey with my children or my, like, you know, for me, that's what I feel more comfortable sharing, because that's, like, my work life is the public domain in a lot of ways. And I think they can gain from it for themselves. Yeah. I think, you know, I think there's, like, when I think about what I needed when I was starting up and trying to overcome my fears of doing whatever it was that I wanted to do, that's the kind of conversation that I needed from the artists that I loved. I needed that reassurance that they felt that way too, and that they overcame it, and maybe I could as well. Like, so yeah, that's actually, like, when we talked before about, you know, what it's cool that everything stopped and then I got to decide what to do again and what would make me feel full. And that was one of the things that I felt motivated to do. I felt motivated to share that journey and help, because I've been in those rooms and I've sat across from artists who've told me things about their process that I never would have known that changed everything when it came to what I was able to do, because I could see, well, if they can do it, like, I could try.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen that they're not perfect. Yes, the song that came out is pretty fucking perfect.
Yeah.
But they're not perfect. They spent so long, like, going back and double doing it, going back and trying it again, getting their friend to write a chord line over it, getting, you know, just doing whatever they needed to do to get it across the line. And I wanted to share that information as much as I could, because it's life changing.
Yeah. And I think it's also that process of, on top of that, what else is going on in your personal life or in your life that's kind of affecting that process? Because I think that's also a massive thing is, I don't know about you, but for me, is like, for me to write music, I have to, like, everything in my life has to be good. I'm not one person that can write music when I'm down or when I've got loads of shit going on. I have to, like, everything has to just piss off and be good. And so it's like, it's really interesting to see how other people do that process.
Yeah. And some people actually alternatively need the drama.
100%.
So they need change and drama to feel motivated to create as well. So yeah, we're all different and we all have, like, the key to unlock whatever it is that but the trick is that we need to know all the different keys to try, right? Yeah. Like, we need to know that, okay, what are you doing right now? You're staying up all night. You're trying to just put those hours in and burn the candle and, like, And you're over it. It's not coming together. Okay, cool. Well, why don't we try it a different way where you wake up every morning, you exercise for an hour, you write yourself a little poem first thing in the day, then scrimple it up, throw it in the bin, then like, you know, then try like making a beat in 5 minutes and then try and make something, you know, just like make beats for 5 minutes for a whole day. Mm. Like we all have to approach it so many different ways to find the key that works for us at that time. And the key that works for us that time won't work for us the second time. Mm. So yeah, I think, and like something that I say in the podcast is that just because you created something great one day doesn't mean that you'll get it tomorrow. Like there's no guarantees. Doesn't matter who you are. So
yeah, I'm going through that. Right
we
now.
All need it.
I'm going through that right now.
You're going through that.
Literally, like I've written the COVID, I wrote so much music. And now I like kind of took time off writing music, which is the first time ever I've taken time off writing music. And now I'm trying to get back into it. And I'm just like, I can't even write.
I can't.
I'm just like, who am I?
That's the thing, right? Like, and you've written so many songs and it's still, I try to explain that to people. I'm like, no, but I don't think I can anymore. It's gone. And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, you've done, it's like, no, that's how it feels. It feels like it's gone.
Yeah.
And like, they say that making music is like walking into a room and you know that there's a light switch in the room, but just it's dark. So you just have to like go around like this, trying to find the light switch. Like that's making music every time. You know that there's a light switch there maybe, but like you got to go looking with your eyes shut.
Yeah, 100%. I can't wait to listen to that. Can you send me the link? I really want to check that out.
Yeah. I'll send it to you. It's on all the potty apps, Create, Destroy.
How can people follow you and do all of that good stuff on social media?
They can follow me on all the social media at Anna Luno, pretty much across everything. I'm not one thing that falls by the wayside for me is my social media, which is the one thing that shouldn't fall by the wayside when you're an artist in 2021. But yet here I am. I'm really good at updating it when I'm feeling out there and doing stuff. But like after the last 2 years, it's just like, what am I going to, I don't feel the flow with it.
You'll get there. You'll get back
when I'm back on the road and the work's done, I'll have lots of stuff to post. But right now I'm just focusing on the work. Yeah. My weekly radio show on Apple Music, podcast coming every 2 weeks. I'm just about to start finishing off my EP, which I wrote earlier this year. And I took a break from it to finish the podcasts. And now I'm going to go back and like finish it off. Another song, I just released a song called Backseat with Genesis Owusu, who's an incredible Australian vocalist.
Amazing.
And I'm releasing another song in January with a really exciting singer from the UK. She's a singer and a DJ who I love right now. I'm stoked to have her on my next song. And then my EP, which will come like straight after, because it's pretty much done. I just need to like mix and
sick. Do how many records?
Five.
Amazing. I like that.
Five.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've never done that. And then never released the five tracker.
Really?
Yeah, never.
Oh my God, do it. I mean, I don't know, do whatever you want. But like, I bet you're sitting on like five albums worth of music.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, we're putting some plans in place. It's mad. We're planning 2023 already.
Wow, that's crazy. Wait, what year is it now? 2022 one. Or one? No, it's one now. One, so 20, okay, so that's really crazy. That's a long time away.
It's a long time, but hey ho, it's fun. We love it.
Good on you,
mate. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been a really nice conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
No worries, lovely to chat with you.
Keep in touch, and I'll see you when you get back.
Hell yeah,
can't wait. See you soon, mate.
Thanks, Will. Bye.
And that is a wrap. Thanks so much to everybody that listened. Hope you enjoyed it. Keep safe. Please share the podcast. Please tell everyone about it. I love you lots. See you next time.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.